Last week, I introduced you to Homer, an old Greek guy who people seem to attribute the Odyssey and the Iliad to. To recap what we know about him, he probably lived on Chios, sometime in 800 to 700 BCE. He was a bard and probably blind, but really, in last week's episode, I asked you to hear me out so together we could investigate this narrative and dive into the complex web of Greek history that makes us question, who is Homer? And is he the sole person that we should be attributing the Odyssey and the Iliad to? So then, I provided a reason to question this, which I described to be the weird and unexplainable historical accuracy of the text, despite the fact that it was written 300 years at the earliest prior to the time period in which it was actually set. But this doesn't sound like much until you take the phases of Greek history into account and consider that the actual events of the Trojan War and Homer's life fall on the opposite ends of a 300-year Dark Ages, where nothing was recorded because the Greeks, in their infinite wisdom, forgot how to write. Which, to put in a modern context, means writing a perfectly historically accurate story set in the 1720s with no sources. That doesn't sound easy, if you ask me. So then, I provided the answer to this predicament, or at least the presumed answer, that although the Greeks forgot to write, they didn't forget to preserve their history. They just did it another way, through the legacy of oral tradition. Which is why even though we look at this period of Greek history as the Dark Ages, the Greeks wouldn't have, because they had centuries of history floating around in their brains in the form of poetry, songs, and prose. Which brings us to the people that performed that history. The bards, which if you recall, Homer himself was, and probably one of the best. To reiterate what I said last week, and where we will pick up this week, it's much more likely that rather than Homer crafting these stories himself, and for some reason just being very historically accurate, he inherited them through a long tradition of spoken word. So instead of being a vastly creative mind, he was referring back to a much older framework of stories and mythology. That's where we'll pick up today, as I dive into why the structure of the Iliad and the Odyssey, as well as historical evidence, leads us to believe that this is the case. I'm not just making this up, guys. Human memory is a powerful tool when trained, and there's not much better training than being forced to memorize upwards of 16,000 lines of poetry in order to preserve upwards of 300 years of history. Yeah, it's good training, but it's also a good way to be stressed all the time. I can see why they'd want to write that one down. Hello, and welcome to the Zed Files. My name is Nina, and I'm here to talk about history. Not all history, just the history I want. And today, I want to talk about Homer. Again. But I'm not gonna waste your time today, because this is, like, kind of my favorite part of the whole story and whole shebang. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Homer. So I introduced this episode with that bit on human memory because I want to talk a bit more about that. So, as I've mentioned, Homer was a bard. And just before I get into your head that the act of reciting and performing history through oral storytelling, you know, barding, is exclusively Greek or somehow the result of being underdeveloped and not knowing how to write, this is not the case at all. I briefly mentioned last week that oral traditions and, you know, quite frankly, just the institution of language is one of the most fundamental things just to human existence. And I would say it's really one of the things that sets us apart from our animal counterparts. And I won't spend too much time on this, but what I mean is that where a monkey can communicate with other monkeys by speaking at a certain pitch, and therefore warn of an imminent threat, such as a lion, or indicate that they have found a tree full of bananas, or they might be able to communicate, look, a lion. They can't communicate, look, a lion. It's coming from the left, hiding behind that clump of tall grass in a stance indicating it is ready to attack based on the way its hind legs are bent. So we should all climb this tree. No, see, the thing is, at least up till this point, it seems that only humans can do that. So the preservation of history through oral traditions shouldn't come as a surprise. In a way, it's all we know how to do. One of the things that I learned while researching this was the potential capacity for human memory, when need be. Perhaps the most fascinating thing that I came across while doing research was the experience of a scholar in the early 1900s named Milman Perry. He studied Yugoslavian bards in order to draw connections between the format that they used and the structure of the Iliad and the Odyssey. And I will get into the connections he found, but first I want to share something else about his experience that can only be described as incredible. So in order to test the capacity of these bards he was studying, he asked them to freestyle a short epic about him. And most were able to, perfectly. They already had enough stories and story structures in their brain from a career of oral performances, just based on their own memories, and were able to insert pieces of information they were given about Perry and build an epic around him. Just right on the spot. That is incredible. But then let's get into some more of Perry's findings and why they support the theory that the Iliad and the Odyssey were just long poems, or songs, way before Homer was ever born. So a lot of Perry's findings revolve around the structure of the epics, the language, the meter, but really he compared the Yugoslavian bards with Homer and the Greek epic structure and discovered aspects of the poetry that really only make sense in a certain context. Let me start with the most basic. When you listen to Homer's language long enough, you'll likely start to pick up on rhythm and hear a formula, or structure. How the chapters flow. I, personally, have chosen to only read translations which retain the verse structure because I wanted to preserve the meter. But this is also something I would say is easier to notice when listening, not just reading, which I have been doing. See, I think we can pretty confidently say that it's hard to memorize 16,000 lines of poetry, right? And although this doesn't necessarily make it too much easier, think about how many lines of song lyrics you have in your brain right now. Probably a lot, right? Maybe not 16,000 lines worth, but probably a lot. So the prevailing theory is that this rhythm that you can find in the Iliad and the Odyssey means that they weren't just speeches, they were songs. And the aspects of them which are unique to a musical composition just found themselves translated into the story when it was written down because by that point they were so deeply embedded in them. But this also helps us understand how the actual act of barding worked. We can infer, based on Perry's comparison with the Yugoslavian bards, that they would have been recalling as much of the story as they could from performance to performance, and then improvising what they forgot. Perry's research is one of the main reasons that today we understand this to be the origin of the Iliad and the Odyssey. Now, I can't really remember how much of this I mentioned in last week's episode, but all of this leads us to believe that this tradition of oral storytelling would have had to begin very soon after the Trojan War in order for it to have preserved so many years of history. I mean, they did get some things wrong, like the gods. I don't know, maybe I'm being nitpicky. But at least when you attribute all the weird and unexplainable aspects of historical accuracy to this, it all becomes clear. For example, it explains why the story is set in the Bronze Age and written so accurately. It's because Homer wasn't inventing the story, he was just relaying it. But let's just back up for 1 second to when I said that we can infer, based on Perry's comparison with the Yugoslavian bards, that they would recall as much of the story as they could from performance to performance, and then they would just improvise what they forgot. I hope that when you heard this, you thought it sounded crazy and were thinking like, Nina, they just improvised all of it? Seriously, that's what you're going to go with? Because I'm about to blow your mind. No, seriously. This is my favorite part of the whole shebang. I don't know why, but I find it's just so fascinating and, like, innovative. And I tell everyone it. And I think I'm the only one who finds it so interesting, but let me explain. So this is how they were able to improvise so much. Now, I'm expecting you've heard the term iambic pentameter, the meter in which all of Shakespeare's poetry follows. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Da 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 da. Now that shit fucked with me in grade 8 when I first heard about it. I could not figure it out. However, I will say that when you compare it to the meter of the homework text, it's so easy. But just like Shakespeare, and likely as a result of the translation of the epics, which would have been made from song to text, they too follow a meter. And this meter is called a dactylic hexameter. Now, this is actually way less strict than iambic pentameter, which I think is what I find really annoying about it. So I'm not even going to try and relay it to you, because honestly, I don't know how. But I will say this. It's like, duh, da-da, I think. Where the thing to remember is that the duh is equal in length to the da-da. So do with that what you will. But even if it is less strict, it's still a meter that needs to be followed. So let's just back up and review again the circumstances under which these bards were singing. So they're drawing from an older framework, about 16,000 lines of it, which they need to have a good chunk of memorized, because if they're not, their story's just gonna be off, and it needs to be mythologically accurate. Literally, that's their whole job. But obviously, they won't remember the whole thing all the time. What they remember will probably just vary from performance to performance, so they kind of have to improvise what they don't recall. Except there's also this meter called dactylic hexameter, which they have to follow. So as they're freestyling parts of the story, they also have to make sure that it all fits into the structure of the poem. And let's be honest, that sounds pretty hard. At least not easy. I'm glad that's not my job. But here's what I find so fascinating about this. They actually developed almost like a system to make this easier, to make the freestyling while remaining true to the meter less difficult. And they did this through epithets. But what is an epithet? An epithet is an adjective or descriptive phrase expressing a quality or characteristic of a person or thing mentioned. But here's what's important. The bards developed multiple epithets for each character. Let me read you a few. When reading the Iliad, Achilles can be referred to as swift-footed Achilles, son of Peleus, lion-hearted Achilles, or breaker of men. In fact, there's probably more. But you kind of need to learn these when reading the Iliad, because a lot of characters will be referred to as son of or lord of, and so if you don't pick up on it, you'll never know who they're talking about. Another example is Pallas Athena, bright-eyed one, whose shield is made of thunder, or daughter of Zeus, to all refer to the goddess Athena. And so if you don't start to realize that the person whose shield is made of thunder is Athena and not, you know, maybe Zeus would make more sense, you're just going to be totally lost. And although in modern literature we might use descriptive words and phrases for characters, we don't do it in this way, where referring to a different aspect of the character is completely interchangeable with using the character's actual name. Now, you might not be able to hear it in English, but in Greek, each one of these phrases takes up different points in the meter and fits perfectly into different points in the line. And so because each character had so many, it meant that you could perfectly plug a different phrase into different points in the meter seamlessly, depending on what line you were in, and therefore how much of the meter you had left to make up for. It was like a puzzle, and these epithets were the puzzle pieces, with different curves and edges fitting into their proper place in the broader poem. And I just think this is absolutely incredible. Maybe you do as well, or maybe you don't, who cares, but if you're curious, they wouldn't even have these just for characters. Famous phrases like rosy-fingered dawn or the wine-dark sea all have equivalents as well, which is just super cool to me. So here's the thing, for these reasons, and for reasons I discussed last week, I think it's obvious to all of us that Homer couldn't have possibly written these epics himself, completely from scratch. It's just so much more likely that he was participating in an oral tradition because of the anachronism and formula. But we need to ask ourselves, why then do we attribute these stories to Homer? Why is it his name who's attached to it and not one of the other likely thousands of people who also participated in this tradition? Well, this is the part that we can be less confident in. There are a handful of theories that attempt to explain this, but honestly, none are really perfect. However, my friends, this is going to need to be the end of this episode. I'm sorry, I thought I could fit it all in, but I can't. There's still so much more left, and I want to get into it and do it well and talk about how many theories there are, because there's so many. But the theories are probably the most fun part, so it'll be a nice conclusion next week to now this three-part long escapade.
I also just want to say one other thing. Obviously, this episode is a little bit shorter. I feel like maybe the quality was a little bit down. I've had a very busy week, guys. I know I shouldn't make excuses, but I did have a busy week. So I'm sorry about that. Next week is also a busy week. It's exam season right now, so it's just kind of all a lot, but I'm doing my best to be consistent still, so. As is custom for multiple part series, all my sources and source recommendations will be placed at the end of next week's episode. Seriously, guys, thank you so much for listening. I feel like I'm really dragging this out. I'm not trying to. I just feel like that's what's happening. And so if you're still invested, I appreciate that.